You don't like me. Ever.
Thanks, sir. So I get the sense that the light atmosphere in the fish that there for serious poem on a serious topic. And it's about suicides, and I suppose everyone's been touched by suicide in some way in Ireland over the last 2 years. And this is the poem that I wrote in response to hearing that an old acquaintance from school has committed suicide. I'm going to play the music and play the poem. Hearing of a suicide. It's the detail that chills, that stills, that spills the heart out onto the floor. It's the detail that settles like ice on the back, the detail that drifts to sadness's shore. He was an only child, an only son, a treasured one. And he dead today, dead today, dead today, and he is dead today. The funeral. We failed, we failed, we failed this one. The bells are rung. As long as no one offers a remedy, we might survive. But the priest can't resist and offers us Christ to bury our tears and hopes in. Tells us in France that it's cool to be Christian. I want to tell him that it's cool to be dead, that coldness comes quick when the body dies. These uncomforting Christian lies offer balm as impotent as the antidepressant. The whole sad sight of cures for what ails, when sometimes we need to soak in our sadness. Sadness, sadness, sadness resounds. The muscles tears, the start of grieving years ahead for the parents and friends. We join the tributaries of grief and send our prayers, our prayers, our prayers. We send our powerful prayers.
As we announced earlier, there's a book launch tomorrow night for Pat Cotter, Making Music.
here, he is to give us some samples of his poetry.
Bridget Peggy and Kelly, a poem called A Song. Poem which has become very famous in America. I discovered it 6 years ago on the internet, and it's a lot of people discovering it for the first time there. Listen. There was a goat's head hanging by a rope in a tree. All night it hung there and sang. And those who heard it felt a hurt in their hearts and thought they were hearing the song of nightbirds. They sat up in their beds and then they lay back down again. In the night wind, the goat's head swayed back and forth, and from far off it shone faintly, the way the moonlight shone on the train track, miles away beside which the goat's headless body lay. Some boys had hacked its head off. It was harder work than they had imagined. The goat cried like a man and struggled hard. But they finished the job. They hung the bleeding head by the school and then ran off into the darkness that seemed to hide everything. The head hung in the tree. The body lay by the track. The head called to the body. Body to the head. They missed each other. The missing grew large between them, until it pulled the heart right out of the body, until the drawn heart flew towards the head, flew as a bird flies back to its cage and the familiar perch from which it trilled. Then the heart sang in the head, softly at first and then louder. Sang long and low until the morning light came up over the school and over the tree, and then the singing stopped. The goat had belonged to a small girl. She named the goat Broken Thorn Sweet Blackberry. Named it after the night bush of stars, because the goat's silky hair was dark as well water, because it had eyes like wild fruit. The girl lived near a high railroad track. At night she heard the trains passing, the sweet sound of the train's horn pouring softly over her bed, and each morning she woke to give the bleating goat his pail of warm milk. She sang him songs about girls with ropes and cooks in boats. She brushed him with a stiff brush. She dreamed daily that he grew bigger, and he did. She thought her dreaming made it so. But one night the girl didn't hear the train horn, and the next morning she woke to an empty yard. The goat was gone. Everything looked strange. It was as if a storm had passed through while she slept, wind and stones, rain stripping the branches of fruit. She knew that someone had stolen the goat and that he had come to harm. She called to him. All morning and into the afternoon she called and called. She walked and walked. In her chest a bad feeling, like the feeling of the stones gouging the soft underside of her bare feet. Then somebody found the goat's body by the high tracks, the flies already filling their soft bottles at the goat's torn neck. Then somebody found the head hanging in a tree by the school. They hurried to take these things away so that the girl would not see them. They hurried to raise money to buy the girl another goat. They hurried to find the boys who had done this, to hear them say it was a joke. A joke is nothing but a joke. But listen, here is the point. The boys sought to have their fun and be done with it. It was harder work than they imagined, this silly sacrifice, but they finished the job, whistling as they washed their large hands in the dark. What they didn't know was that the goat's head was already singing behind them in the tree. What they didn't know was that the goat's head would go on singing, just for them, long after the ropes were down and that they would learn to listen, pale after pale, stroke after patient stroke. They would wake in the night thinking they heard the wind in the trees or a night bird, but their hearts beating harder. There would be a whistle, a hum, a high murmur, and at last a song. The little song a lost boy sings, remembering his mother's call. Not a cruel song, no, not cruel at all. This song is sweet, it is sweet. The heart dies.
Brilliant. Thanks a million. Okay, next up we have mystery writer extraordinaire Joe Sweeney.
Thank you, Anna. I'm on a much more cheerful theme now. It's just dense. This is the page or so from a short story, a ghost story that I'm writing about two boys whose parents have just been killed, and they had to leave their home because obviously there's no one to pay the mortgage on. They're going to stay with Aunt Emily. It's called Aunt Emily's Secret. Since the death of our parents and the discovery that we would have to leave Appleton Close, I've had some strange and desperate ideas, you know. But depressed at the thought of having to leave our old home, I began to think that maybe we could camp nearby in Appleton Park, or maybe even at the bottom of the back garden. It is a very long garden, you see, and there are trees. We'd hardly be seen from the house. I told myself that we could maybe talk to the new owners when they arrived, and they might let us stay. They might understand that all our memories of childhood and our parents were there, that if we had to leave Appleton Close, we would be heartbroken. Ridiculous notions like that, you know? Just imagine it, Darren and I, camping next to the back of our. It is hard to imagine a future now without Mom and Dad to guide us. What makes it worse is this knowledge that it should never have happened. Dad and Mom should still be alive. It's just not fair. Just because that stupid lorry driver had a drink too many, it has left myself and Darren feeling so lost, so disconnected from the world. The invisible cord connecting us to our parents has been cut forever. Everyone we have seen over the past 3 weeks, school friends and neighbors, have all become distant from us, as if they are afraid to come near us, as if they don't know what to say, what to talk to us about. I suppose they feel that if they talk about Mom and Dad, they are probably afraid they will bring all the pain back to us. And if they don't mention it, it will seem like they have forgotten or don't care. It's a real dilemma. The death has come like a wolf into our lives and blown down all our friendships as if they were a little straw house in the town. We are changed forever. We had a life stretching in front of us. We had plans, kickboxing lessons, clubs, girlfriends, the school musical coming up, fitter on the roof, all kinds of things. I guess Mom and Dad's death cast us out of the house to be sorrowful fitters on the roof now. And now we don't even have a roof to fiddle on anymore. Well, things are getting better. Now we are on the train and heading to Aunt Emily. For a long time we were really lost, like confused ants, tiny and helpless, whose hill has been destroyed, not knowing what direction to go in. We didn't want to leave Appleton Close at all. We stayed in the house all the time, clinging to it in our old lives, but we had to leave in the end. We always have to leave in the end. We're on our way now anyway. We know where we're going at last, I hope. The train is rocking about, Darren's still whimpering. What's new? Sometimes when he looks at me, there's a strange look in his eyes. I tell myself that it's just grief, but it worries me, that look. It unnerves me. When I first noticed it, I thought that it might be a kind of accusation, like he was blaming me for something, I really felt that I was taking it all too easily and not crying all the time like him. But crying and feeling sorry isn't going to bring Mom and Dad back. We've got to get on with our lives now. I really do wish that Darren could face up to the reality. I know well how he feels. It makes me sad to think that we won't be waking up ever again in our old bedrooms or drifting downstairs, bleary-eyed, half asleep, into the huge old kitchen, to the smell of breakfast, to find our parents murmuring quietly to each other. We are never again going to hear Mom calling up to us from the bottom of the old staircase as we come down reluctant and late as usual. And what time do you think this is? Never again will we hear goodbye, boys. I love all of it, the dull thud of Dad's car door in the driveway, and the crunch of the tires on the gravel as he pulls off in the morning. All these little things that I hardly even noticed before that I took for granted are coming back now, growing in my mind like shadows in the firelight, and they could overwhelm me if I let them. There have been many occasions since the funeral when I almost broke down and cried like Darren. I could so easily if I had let myself. But if I can't afford that luxury, I must keep hardening myself for the road ahead. Dad and Mom can't help us now. They are gone forever. We are on our own. We have to depend on our own resources.
Of boyhood vigor, a flirtatious idea of magical creation. Have you had enough fooling around now? Do you want to get down to business? Grow a beard, make some art, listen to the ways, chant with integrity and honesty? Or how about you mature enough and become humble? Maybe do a painting. But let us not talk about it. Let us find these filled for lonely rooms and hint at past successes with defeated glances. I am defeated, and under this defeat, my genius is rebuked.
Thanks, Gerald. One of our runners-up five words. Next up, thanks for coming in, Seamus Harrington.
They searched to the west of Mobile. Since dawn they've rehiked every hill. They tasted success, great charges they'll press, but shortly they're lying very still. For 12 months he hid in Lixnaw, the hermit who nobody saw. This is so senseless, this is the census, it's merely complying with the law. Rovaniemi, 72, 66 degrees 30 north, 25 degrees 44 east. Suspensions jacked up, oversized, customized running boards, odd plated, slouched down streetcars. Lumberjack the lads, low profile alloys, hard men, soft tops, pungent pickups, big bore chrome pipes, flat, flat, bah, check it out, baby. Supercharged growlers, wide wheel arch, dragster wannabes, sonorous Harleys parade on every avenue, by good time seekers and log jammed rats. Bystanders giggle at new wealth, old sport, numerous tongues, just one body language. Newsflash, Alaskan ice cream in short supply, onerous reindeer parched in faraway places. Water by the bottle for sale in Killarney at the Munster final. twosomes and gazebos. I heard it through the grapevine. Backpack pipers, lone prospectors, long-haul tourists, lappish window shoppers. Crawl around again, then Norway vote no. Moat town round once more. Soak it all up. Come on, let's party. Sundown is not for 2 months yet. Coast watch. Sandpipers wait by the blue lagoon. Tractor boat skipper embarks his party. Guillemot gapes at the Yannick's plunge. Windsurfers brace at harbour's moat. Hang glider wheels around the Martello. Board watcher zooms out over sound. Jet ski driver maintains her distance. Sheep dippers urge their hesitant flock. Ferry boat shuttles across the fairway. Crude oil tanker slips from her berth. Harbour pilot still meets his deadlines. Scuba divers glide out of their depth. Trimaran shows a clean pair of heels. Lone potter rounds his own gangway. Dinghy sailors link in line abreast. Sea anglers reel at resounding echo. Half-deckers pace lady's cocks pour. Coast guard rib recrosses her wake. Hill walker stops dead in her tracks. Ab sailors back down the broken cliff. Water safety school undergoes a tot. Deep sea trawler discharges her catch. All weather lifeboat resumes her station. Lightkeepers absent forever and ever. Retreat. No weekend case or steerage trunk. No small finesse or Chinese junk. In search of grace to beat blue funk. All sins efface, no longer drunk. Knows his embrace on hallowed chunk. Beholds his face or mermaid's dunk. A sense of place unknown to flunk. Before my space or blubber skunk. The angler's trace, no grass or skunk. At last, one place, but then kerplunk. No double bass, hard rock or punk. In uppercase, temptation sunk. That night, your place, no who'd have thunk. That waypoint place, where myths debunk. But time to pace. Pursuit the hunk, that scanty space, in robes pre-shrunk, from peak to base, no front door trunk, slow steps retrace, soul's countersunk, west winds amace, poor skelly monk. Thank you.
Please welcome one of my favorites, Reed Buckley. Called Tap the Window. When only your shadow will walk with you home, when you can hear the night's breath but not catch your own, when doctors can't find what it is your blood lacks, when all of your feelings are spiders with cracks, when all that suggests you're here is smack up your shoes clattering on stone, when you're the ballerina in box that spins on its own, when you can no longer tell if you're hungry or full, when you've chosen the curtain before play is true, when memory is playing and their silent movies scream from their set, when you don't want to remember but cannot forget, when mosquitoes must up from a cup that's so bitter, when communications words shouted from one person's hole up to another's banister, when you go out to bars to break the bars down, when you know if you walk under the black bridge, you'll never be found. When you're so invisible, ghosts could walk straight through you, when mirrors won't let you be the person you want to. When even your shoes no longer fit, you're unsteady, when the whole sky changes before you are ready. When a flock of birds scatters having taken fright, when your voice shatters across the glass of the light, just remember, some may still dream of you. And they are the ones who have truly felt you. If you'd have met their gaze, not caught the silvery thread spun between you. Just remember, some may still dream of you, and they are the ones who have truly seen you. Where you were unwound, your ghostly self there, more free, more profound. You have taken up space in their cells, and not just the sidewalk. Just remember, some may still dream of you. They are the ones who have truly heard you, in a place without lines, where colors run into each other. They have felt the pulse beat in your eyes. They are the ones who have taken you aside, whose walls you've walked through to settle beside the hearts of their bedchambers. And you tap at their windows, unaware that you've already found a place there.
And at the back where I as yet be stationed, the duller touch upon a strong attack, although my skill be weak, my heart be patient, to life I seek within my youth I lack. Will they be there advised to pick the teams, still picking teams and saying to up front, I see me now in my deluding dreams, among them, players there of the mountain. Still knows no class, and glory always comes. To those who's left with made me look a fool. Will God pass me the ball on my last run, or leave me out, just like you did in school.
Next up we have Paul Casey.
I was out in college again this weekend. I like to get out there to share the lines. My mum's side of the family were all Middleton, and my dad's side are all the city, you know. So when I'm standing in Cove, I kind of feel like I can stretch my arms out and, you know, this big womb of the bay is all mine. So I wrote this one, and it's about how Statio Bene Fiat Carina. Again, again, all hearts will seek their mother. Those sails that wander home can rarely stay. Soon they must depart for life, their lover. The run of kings goes journeying to discover their fleet is seldom found beyond the bay. Again, again, all hearts must find their mother. Her circling harbor arms are sister, brother, who roll the envied rage of sea to clay. But soon they must return to life. However, while cords are severed, not the strongest tether, which stretches thin as silk, as thick as day, again and again, all hearts must find their mother. Progress of heaven's weed is flower and feather, a soothe of endless pearls our heads to lay, until we waken back to life, our lover. Where in that sea we find her in each other, the swallows of November, of May. Again, again, all hearts must find their mother. In steeped in fire, seek out life, their lover.
Brilliantly heard on that, isn't it? Okay, thanks very much, Paul. And next we have Dahl, our James.
What night is the boat's end when you think you're losing a poem? Songs of coals collapsing in the fire grey have roused me. I saw the last spark spent away into the disappearing night. But night, do not leave me. The daytime ashes are still warm. Now hold my dreaming gaze down until the creeping light. Sleep, do not claim me. You devourer of all short thoughts, There are embers in the heart that can still be wrought, shaped, hammered, eventually cajoled along the ancient footprints of the bold. This is one by Sean O'Riordan that I translated and along the same theme, but I'm not comparing myself with him. Just a similar poem. I wrote a perfect poem last night using similes and metaphors from heaven and all other poems, things poets need, things even and uneven, a prayer written that brought me life. Next morning I sat down again to think another poem that would seem as well, using myth and mood and near rhyme and rhyme, and nothing gelled. The paper refused ink, and it was a failure, therefore a sin. My perfect prayer then bid me adieu and left me with my sins to rue. Thank you.
That is the end of our list of open mic. Excellent. That's just what we're looking for. Brilliant. Come on up. Can you remind me of your name? Gail. I'm sorry, Gail. I met you 2 seconds ago. Everyone, please welcome Gail from Louisiana. Virginia.
In Bremen. I'm a stranger in this town, in this land that once almost became my home. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, far, far from home. And far from home, a stranger. My work here has ended, a week conferring, reading my work, a break from the drudgery of living inside my head, spitting words touched tight into Bill Gates' words. My colleague, my colleagues have all left for home, leaving me far, far from home. 20 years when I last had a chance to go. Two cards stretched between two roofs. Heimat, Hamburg, homeland. Far, far from home. As the bus pulls into Hamburg, I look for familiar streets and what could have been Heimat, homeland.